Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to do anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
I was, it wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
It's hot in this studio. It's absolutely bloody roasting.
You think, or maybe it's just like...
Well, you've only arrived in. I've been here for 3 hours at this stage.
Maybe you're just carrying a lot of body heat, you know? I mean, it's just...
It's an
observation.
Whoa.
I didn't think it was hugely warm.
I got a big jumper on.
I'm in no position
That's
to
speak. The issue.
I'm in no position to speak in this topic. No, it is actually a bit warm, to be fair.
It is very warm.
I mean, I don't want to bring the listeners and the viewers into the life outside, you know, away from on the air here, but you were complaining about this during the break. You were getting angry.
Well,
you're making demands.
I was making demands of JP to get us a bloody fan in here.
Yeah,
we've no air conditioning.
Yeah,
which makes it difficult when you have 5 or 6 people in and around the same very little working space.
I saw you did that sort of quiz thing before Christmas. How many people were in the room for that?
Well, there was about 7 or 8 people in the room.
A few of them hung over as well.
Oh, like, well, that's the stink of alcohol off Kevin Kilbane when he arrived in halfway through.
Didn't want to name him, but you mean he was your teammate, wasn't he? But
he was.
That's adding a lot.
We won that quiz.
It's adding a lot to the moisture, the odour.
Yeah, we're getting used to the new studio. It'll be fine.
You're getting there.
We'll get there. So Peter Crouch, I was only joking at 8 o'clock that they should go after Peter
Crouch. It's prescient here. It's like maybe things are so bad in Chelsea that they are just, you know, having a scout out. Like, you know, back in the day, you're sort of playing these like football manager games and you do like a vague search. I actually see there's this website, Transfermarkt, now, which is you can actually do searches on it, like for out of contract players and stuff like that.
Right.
And they have a good,
what's it called?
They have a Transfermarkt. I think it must be German origin. It's Transfer
M-A-R-T.
M-A-R-K-T. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's where I get all my stats from me research.
Yeah, it is good.
Commentaries.
It's a good website.
That's brilliant.
But, I mean, if you hear bizarre stories about, like, clubs looking for players from Norway and Sweden, you can search, like, local clubs, Irish clubs, you can pretty much search on that website, say, who's out of contract over there, and play a little sort of detective game almost with it. It's a great site, but you almost wonder, are Chelsea in some strange, like,
they're
looking for the phone book here going, who have we got?
So we decide we want, and you can sort of maybe, in a way, see the attraction of an Andy Carroll, the same way he gets linked with a call up to the England squad before every major championship, because, well, here, what happens when we're 2-1 down in the closing stages and we want someone to bring on with 6 minutes left that could do something different? Andy Carroll's
it's pragmatic. It's kind of like the kind of transfer that Paul Merson and Phil Thompson would approve of. You know, these guys who know it's not the Marco Silva type of striker they're going for.
We've heard of this guy. Yeah. We know everything about
him. This guy knows the Premier League. But he knows the Premier League. Crouch knows the Premier League. He's played for most of the clubs in it.
But you know, there's no great correlation between the way Peter Crouch plays the game and Andy Carroll plays the game.
He's just big.
Now, both of them have good feet for big men.
Yeah.
But I would say Crouch is nowhere near the physical specimen.
No, it's a different type of presence. I mean, for all the cliche, Crouch is good with his feet. You know, he actually can sort of...
He can link up play.
Link play, yeah. You're kind of wondering, what are they really looking for here?
This has ended up almost being embarrassing for Chelsea.
It is. I mean, you're kind of thinking, I'm sure they were probably happy it was out there. They were sniffing around Alexis Sanchez for a while because at least that looks respectable. Maybe they knew this was coming down the tracks and they wanted that information out in the ether.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, we tried for him.
Michael Emenolo and haven't replaced him as of yet. And there also seems to be murmurings of, well, maybe again, Abramovich is looking at this. He's almost accepting that Conte is going to leave during the summer. So whereas they realise they need a striker, they need some backup, he's also unwilling to go in and spend 50 million quid on Alexis Sanchez or any other striker right now, considering in all likelihood they'll have a new manager in the summer.
Yeah.
And he may not fancy this striker they've just spent 50 million quid on.
Yeah, no, it's a really strange situation. And, you know, Richie was talking just in the news there about there could be in a bit of trouble for sort of sanctions as well for underage recruitment. Imagine if they got hit with some kind of
transfer ban and they just signed Peter Crouch and that's all they have for the next 3 years.
It's like,
can you play till you're 40
now,
Peter?
Well, I assume they can probably recall the 2,500 players they have on loan in various parts around Europe. You've got to assume like it's a big WhatsApp group there where, like, you know, not even to be sort of facetious about it, I assume they must have players they can loan back, you know, or guys on their books that are out there somewhere, but not someone maybe who fits that profile. I mean, we touched on it the other day. It's like this Chelsea striker hunt has become like the Stoke manager search or something, where you just need people with experience and you're just going down the list and down the list and down the list. And Paul Lambert suddenly ends up in a 2.5 year deal. This is like Peter Crouch, ironically at Stoke as it is, suddenly ends up getting a move to Chelsea. Like that, see the dressing room chat there at Stoke every morning, it's pretty entertaining now. Like what's happened and what's come together over
next to be Sido Berahino.
Yeah. Oh, listen, that would be the story. That would be the one.
Are they overreacting here in terms of the backup needed for Morata?
Well, I mean, it's it. Batshuayi is sort of, and his people are looking at this going, wow, I mean, he hasn't done well, and particularly in some games recently, the FA Cup games where he's had a chance. There was a handful of games earlier in the season. He came on and scored a Champions League game away, I think he might have. I mean, I know he's been a bit of a disappointment,
yeah.
But it's a real shocking vote of no confidence. I mean, you can trace all this back to Lukaku going a period of time, you know, a time ago.
Well, it seems the other players that have been linked, and again, maybe the more realistic. Well, again, Fernando Llorente
would be
Spurs letting, because then Spurs would have to go and do exactly.
Was Vincent Janssen and Vinny Janssen off somewhere?
He is. You know, he's gone. Yeah. But they're not going to let. Like, I actually think Llorente's got very few minutes in the Premier League. He has shown glimpses that if he was given an opportunity, he might be able to take advantage of that. But why would Spurs sell to Chelsea for what is probably negligible money? What would be the point of that?
No.
And the other one is Christian Benteke. Again.
Benteke, yeah.
Let's go for the big lad.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, what about Shane Long? Not the big lad, but likes a January transfer.
Oof.
Likes nothing more than a January transfer.
And you know, he's great at drawing fouls.
Yeah, he can be
good in the air.
Shane Long, like, I've often
still got a bit of pace. He killed that lad from Watford for pace last weekend.
Yeah, no, the thing about Shane Long, his goal scoring record is poor, but I have often thought that he could be a useful squad player in a very good team just because of the attributes that you mentioned. You know, if you're in a particular point in the game, I can sort of see why he could 10 minutes off the bench. People are going to laugh at it, but we're talking about Peter Crouch here.
Well, an hour ago we were laughing about Peter Crouch. Look where we are now.
What is now conceivable? You know, I'm struggling to think of sort of players around the Premier League, you know, as we talk about it, you know, and that actually are going to be available in January for a real price, you know, real price that fits your needs. I mean,
let's get on to the serious stuff, Dan.
Yeah.
Very serious from your point of view. Dundalk, the takeover has gone through.
Yeah, it's the story I always expected to cover at some stage, you know, watching Dundalk teams over the years, you know, fluttering around trying to survive on a week-to-week basis.
The American, it was only a matter of time before the American
takeover was coming, and it's eventually happened. It's been protracted. It's not maybe like the shock factor has been lost, I think, to people, because it's been out for a period of time, and it was meant to be done before Christmas, and it's just been legal stuff and just getting across the line. It's now done. It's now
finished.
They're no longer owned by Paul Brown, Andy Connolly. They're now owned by, from what I can gather, quite a lot of people, really, in that it's a consortium of businessmen backed by Peak Six. I mean, Peak Six are the name that springs to mind, because they're the company. They're sort of an equity firm who have that stake in Bournemouth. But
are there any Irish people involved?
As far as I know, no. I think it's effectively American. I think there may well be one English person involved as well.
So do we know who's actually going to run the club?
It's already sort of known that there's a guy called Malachy Branigan he's been hired by them. He's not like part of the people who own the stake, who would have been managing director at Derby County and Sheffield United when Nigel Clough was there.
Okay.
Also worked for Everton, for Hull City and a couple of other clubs. And he's basically going to be the CEO, you know, the person who runs the day-to-day affairs. Beyond that, there's still a bit of guesswork or lack of knowledge maybe at this point about what their plans may fully be. My understanding would be they're going to come in, they're going to appoint some staff because they have full-time playing staff and management, but they never had the administrative staff off the field. You know, you're talking about owners who have other business commitments and volunteers effectively backing up two full-time administrators of staff, you know. So now I think they're going to make a couple of appointments there.
Front of house.
Yeah, have a front of house. Have
a fully professional setup.
Yeah, and that's important. You know, I mean, it goes without saying that it's important.
Well, that's a really good thing for the league.
Yeah, I mean, the Dundalk story was quaint when they were in Europe. It was a fantastic story, but I guess part of the coverage, it emphasised how brilliant they were doing, but also how mad it was that you have a situation where sort of people, school teachers off at UEFA draws, you know, taking phone calls about work and stuff, while you know every other person in the room is a full time staff member, almost laughing at this novelty. So, like, what, you know, what you do, what, you know, and it's still a long road ahead for them to get back. And I mean, we're being sort of flippant. I think there is an element of. There's always an element of fear here because of experiences that Irish clubs have had with outside investors.
Well, there's also a fear here, I think, because...
What's their game?
Well, Dundalk have just received a major lump sum from UEFA.
Yeah.
So suddenly there's a cash pile there
yeah.
that we would have assumed under the previous ownership would have filtered its way down into the club, would have covered the club for the foreseeable future. Now that cash pile is part of a greater company.
Yeah,
can do what they want with.
Well, this has to be ascertained. I mean, it's there's different interests involved, people involved who I think it's encouraging that they have a football background. There's an ex-footballer in there who's involved, played with various clubs in America. There's a guy Jordan Gardner, quoted by Richie in the news again. He's been part of Swansea, but also involved in semi-pro football in the States. But these are people who are interested in football. Their legal advisor was Trevor Watkins, former Bournemouth chairman. So. I think, you know, you think of the bad examples. Arcaga, we never really knew what at Cork City this was, which was a disaster. Very hard to know who you were dealing with, and the front man ended up in a bit of bother afterwards for other stuff. The loan thing, for example, I mean, they wouldn't even tell us who the owners were, which might have been a slight concern.
But also, you would look and go, why would anyone around Europe pick Athlone Town as a club to invest in?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Dundalk doesn't have, I mean, they have ground issues to sort out and issues. From what I can gather, certainly, and it's pretty obvious, this is stating the obvious, it's the European thing to put them on the map. They have potentially easy access to Europe every year at the moment, and the European money is going up. There was a UEFA report this week which came out about the finances in 2016. That was the year Dundalk went into the Europa League, and Dundalk's sort of income and the income stream and revenue accounted for like 43% of any money generated in the League of Ireland that year, you know, or a good portion of 43%.
Yeah.
It's the European money is where it's at. It's going to go up in the next cycle, the European prize money, even at the lower rounds. So at least, you know, there's a good chance that European money can offset a bit of spending in the first team. The question is, how much do they want to put in and how far do you go? Because it's still so difficult to get to that Champions League, that golden ticket. I mean,
well, you really don't want to end up you don't want to end up in a situation in 3 years' time where actually what we feel might have been a good thing, and they've invested massively in the playing squad, and it looks as though they've put together a group that could maybe qualify for the Champions League, and then they get knocked out in the final playoff round, and suddenly there's not the money to back it up. That they've taken the risk.
True. I mean, not to pick the point, if they went to the final playoff round, they'd still have that, you know, they'd have the Europa League, and they'd have probably another 10 million. It'll be worth that in a couple of years. It's getting through those first round or two. What helps them is the weakness of the league in general, in a strange way, because the disaster here is a year where they don't get into Europe. And then all of a sudden, that's when things get sticky. It's just very hard to see four teams being better than them at the moment, you know, in the current climate. And that is, you see around Europe, there's been an investment in certain clubs in smaller leagues with a view to being dominant there, and then seeing where it takes it. Now, there's a broader debate about how good that is for the league here too. I'm very conscious of that. And we need to find out more from these people about their plans.
Just before we leave this then, very briefly, like long term, there's a million different things that could happen in terms of European Super Leagues, Atlantic Leagues.
Totally.
And Dundalk would love to be in a position
totally.
Over the next 5 years that when those conversations are happening, they're at the table and they're under consideration. But over the next 12 months, do you expect us to see noticeable changes in and around Oriel Park, in and around the playing squad and the investment?
I think the playing squad isn't going to change dramatically. They sort of have their budget-ish in place. I think the big decision is about the ground, and I think they've got decisions to make that they can't do them before the start of the season. I think redoing one side of the ground completely is an option, but even to do that at short notice in Ireland, you know, there's planning, there's things you have to do. And I don't think they have a huge pot of money to come in and do that either. I don't think this is mad money coming in. But there are people you would hope with their football background that are there for the right reasons. and tentatively welcome it, I guess.
Well, I had two great ideas at the 8 o'clock news round. One was that maybe Chelsea should go after Peter Crouch. The other was maybe they should just move Dundalk to Dublin, where there's, you know, a far greater support base.
That's an interesting point, Nathan. And if you ever visit Dundalk again, I would like to confirm that I do not, in fact, know you.
Yes, that's fine. All right, earlier today, the Keith Andrews Show made a I'm sure you were watching. It was a triumphant debut on Facebook Live, offtheball.com and Periscope. Stick it in your diary. It'll be live next Thursday once again at 12:30. Loads of really exciting things that Keith has lined up over the next few weeks. Today, Keith was talking to Megan Campbell, the Manchester City and Ireland left back, and also to Matt Doherty, who is at Wolves now after moving over from Bowes back in 2010. It was a move that Doherty reckons was always on the cards.
No, I always had aspirations. As a 16-year-old, I had been on many trials, double-figure trials in terms of teams, but it just never quite clicked for me. I'll admit now that I never really performed when I had gone away. You're right, I was working with my dad, doing carpet upholstery cleaning and rug cleaning. It was quite tough. But, I mean, I quite enjoyed it, going around with my dad every day and the chats that we used to have in the van of, still had ambitions for me to go away, but it would have been more through, because as I was getting older, more through the League of Ireland set up. I still thought I could get away that way.
Yeah, I want to touch on that. Matt, as well, in terms of the underage. And did you feel at that stage when you were 16, 17 that potentially you'd missed the boat? I know there's been a lot done in the last couple of years with the underage structure, and it's probably better, it's certainly better now than it was when I was playing at that age. I felt if I didn't get across the water at 15, 16, then I certainly would have missed a boat, because after that, very few go. But you are now one of those examples. And having worked in the underage setup with the FAI for the last couple of years, they do have the option now of staying, furthering the education and going over that little bit more mature, maybe.
Well, obviously, initially when you're 16, you see people your age, Robbie Brady, Jeff Hendricks, go away, and others who obviously have come back now haven't quite made it. Yeah, you do start to think, well, is it gone for me? But like I said, I always had a belief that I could get there through the League of Ireland. It didn't come as quick as I thought. When it came at 18, I thought it would be more 21 when it might happen, 22. There is more of an opportunity now. When I went at 18, like, I was past the homesickness. That wasn't an issue at all. I was desperate to get over. I was more mature, having been around with my dad in the van, seeing what real work was like. So when I went over at 18, then, I mean, I really tried to grasp the opportunity when it came, which helps when you see, when I'm going around with my dad, I see all the work that you have to do. So when you go over there, it really makes you think, I don't want to give this chance up at all.
Yeah, look, I totally agree with you. How much of an influence were, and how much of a help were the Irish lads that were already over there? Obviously, Wolves has a huge kind of connection with Irish players. The likes of Kevin Doyle, Stephen Hunt, Kevin Foley, Wardy was there at the same time as well, wasn't he? Mick, obviously, the manager. Did that help with your kind of introduction into the club? Did they help you out?
Yeah, it helped unbelievably. You even had boys, Aaron McCary, Anthony Ford, there my age, and even a couple of boys younger, but it was... them boys, you know, they're like Hunty, Doyle, they welcome anybody in. They don't have any kind of ego about them at all. Even now, I'm still friends, as you know, to Hunty to this day. We've kept in contact quite a bit. They were a massive, massive help. Even the manager himself, obviously, Mick, brought me over, helped me in many ways. So it was all good from their behalf.
And speaking of Mick, Mick was your first, obviously, and first of many. Yeah. You've gone through quite a few. And look, the championship being the championship, that is very much the nature. But you've gone through Mick, Solbakken, Saunders, Lambert, Walter Zenge. You must have taken a lot from those managers. But when the new manager comes in the door, do you think I have to tweak the way I play because he may want me to play a different way? Or have you simply kind of thought, no, I need to be Matt Doherty. These are my strengths, and this is what I stand for. Is a bit of a mixture, maybe.
I've never tweaked how I've thought about playing. No manager has come to me and said, "Listen, you need to think about your defending a little bit more." Because obviously, I'm like going forward. They've never said to me, "You need to do this. You need to do that." They've just kind of let me get on with it. And obviously, a few of them have coached me along the way in terms of a little improvement here or there positionally, but none of them have gotten in the way of me trying to play my natural game at all. So yeah, I've been quite fortunate that way.
That is the Wolves and Ireland defender Matt Doherty talking to Keith Andrews on the all-new Keith Andrews Show a little bit earlier today. It's on air, Facebook, YouTube, Periscope, Twitter, all those things. 12:30 every single Thursday. Matt Doherty just turned 25. Part of Keith's show was we had a discussion about the next Ireland squad, based on injuries, based on who we'd like to see called up. And it was very hard. We're sort of doing this off the line in Luke Edwards' story that Martin O'Neill's very excited about working with all these great young players. And I was going through mine. I had Kieran O'Hara, the Manchester United under 21 keeper, basically on why not get him involved.
He brought him in October, and I saw him even going over for a bit of chat with him. At that point it was like, geez, he's definitely lining himself up for the long term here, you know. This is what's going on.
Like, but you can't, like, quite simply, you can't play Kieran O'Hara in an international when he's not playing any club football at senior level.
Well, can you not? I mean, what did Wales do with Ben Woodburn?
But Ben Woodburn,
I know he's a higher calibre, he's outfield player,
and he had played for Liverpool. Played senior first team football. I just think, particularly with the goalkeeping position, that you can't be throwing people in when they
I take the point.
And I know he's playing under 23s.
There's players who probably need a spin in goals as well. That's not an area you're worrying. I think out pitch is.
But aside from that, and we had people texting in saying, "What about someone like Corey Whelan? We should be getting players like that capped." Like, Corey Whelan's just gone on loan to Yeovil. Granted, he was the Liverpool under 23 captain. He's just signed a new contract at the club. But again, he's probably going to have to go down a level and work his way back up, a la Robbie Brady. And when you look at that current under 21 side, in fact, the only one who's probably ready to step up right now is Declan Rice.
Yeah, you would think Rice. I think, I mean, someone like Josh Cullen, his loan didn't go that well. It depends what your plan is here, though. I mean, there's ready now, or do you take a punt and say, well, they're going to be ready in a year, I think. I mean, if you're paying people money for their football expertise, you would hope that they can go to that they're in a situation where they're not always reactive to someone's club position. They can go and watch a player and say, this guy's got something about him. I would say, you know, I think it was a mistake that Sean Maguire wasn't called in last summer, because then Sean Maguire mightn't have been as new as he was in October. And you would hope that people who know the game better than us hacks and so on would be able to say, oh, that guy's a player, let's get him in around the place. And I think there's an element of that with this thing, maybe in Turkey in particular in March. I'd throw in Conor Ronan, Wolves player who's just gone on loan to Portsmouth, played his first game for Portsmouth, proper game last week, by all accounts man of the match, or certainly played very well for them. Technical player, creative, English born, I must say, which maybe makes you a bit more urgent about it. He impressed for Wolves in the cup competitions, and when he played last year, I'd have no problem with someone like him being brought to Turkey as an example.
Yeah, the under 21s are actually doing quite well, which is most unusual, because they've had horrible campaign after horrible campaign. And part of me thinks maybe they're playing Azerbaijan in March. Part of me thinks maybe Declan Rice should be playing in that
leave
game.
Leave them at it. I know the point.
Leave them at it. But also, we're talking about, like, you think back to Jack Grealish, and everybody within the FAI thought, there's no chance Jack Grealish is ever going to turn his back on Ireland. This guy is 100% committed. Suddenly, he's playing first team football for Villa. He's scoring goals on Super Sunday, and he's a big star, and it all goes to pot. When I was over at Wembley, and Declan Rice is putting in a man of the match performance against Spurs, and he's been asked questions in the mix zone afterwards by English journalists who've never really heard of him, noticed him. He's been asked about his international future. I don't even think they knew he was playing for Ireland at underage level. And the question comes up, what about England? And in fairness, he answered the question very well, said, listen, I'm with Ireland, I'm very happy, I'm looking forward to going back in March. But you just don't know what happens at a club. Suddenly two or three of his mates start getting called up to England. Maybe he thinks this is more natural route. Like, it sort of feels we do have to get Declan Rice into the senior squad as soon as possible. He's that good.
I think so. Yeah, he is that good. There's always an element of paranoia about it, and I am always wary of applying Grealish's case to others. I mean, hopefully Declan Rice's dad doesn't start doing a series of interviews. That's when I really start to get really worried, you know. And you watch him singing the anthem for the 21s, and you're like, this could be okay. But then you're thinking, is this my evidence? You know, is this what I've got?
Mouthing it.
But I mean, he was recruited, I think, by Mark O'Toole, who was one of the FAI scouts, who has been prominently involved, and I think he's cited him as an important influence in his career. And I think they are the people doing some good work behind the scenes. And there's an element of trust there. I take the point about the 21s completely. The reason they haven't done good in campaigns, one of the big reasons, is that anyone half decent is almost gone, taken, or they're peaking later. We're two different types of player. But I think you are right. You touched on it with Keith, that actually the likes of Matt Doherty, Greg Cunningham, you know, the young lads might be 25, 25, 26 now and uncapped, as opposed to maybe 18, 19. You almost imagine there's all these teenagers going to come along. But I would throw Conor Ronan in there as someone, if he plays four or five more games at League One level and is doing well and you think he's going to be good enough, why not?
Yeah, Alan Brown was another player that
he's in.
Actually, one guy who didn't get into either of our squads was Daryl Horgan.
Yeah, Horgan's got a bit of work to do now, but I think it's improved for him in the last month at Preston. And strangely enough, we're probably, in some ways, in terms of wingers, there's a lot of players around them in the same position. Okay, McLean is the obvious one, but even someone like Callum O'Dowda is there too and doing reasonably well at his club. And you know, we'll see how we're going to use certain other players going forward, the use of Robbie Brady in future teams. And there is decisions like, how do we use a lot of midfielders that we have? And I think that's the problem for Horgan. I would have him around the place. I definitely would. But he needs a good season. You know, he needs a good run of games to be fully in discussion. I can understand why he's dropped off the radar a small bit.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we're talking to Graeme Hunter.
Off the Ball.
In association with AIR. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
Graeme Hunter, come on in.
A very good evening to you.
How are you?
I'm in pretty robust form. I've spent the last 3 days crisscrossing England to do nice interviews with Les Ferdinand, Paul Dickov, and then Andy Robertson in sequence. And it's been a reminder of how much I love my job and how wonderful people in football can be. So you find me now back in Barcelona, kind of ebullient.
I dare say Andy Robertson is loving life right now.
Yeah, and life kind of loves him too. Hard-working, funny, talented, articulate, above all, Scottish. Clearly finding the environment at Liverpool right now to his taste, learning quickly, taking part in an extraordinary game at the weekend, which clearly he enjoyed. They won, but I think he's the right, what do they call it in that astronaut movie? He's the right stuff. I think he's the right stuff, and I'm proud. I wanted to speak to him about, you know, his football and the environment there and what he's learning and so on and so forth and his background. But, you know, I still find pride that a Scot is making his way at an exciting football team at a historic club too. So that was very good. And the other two gentlemen proved to be full of wisdom and fun and good stories. So the big interview listeners will be beneficiaries from now on. You did ask me. That's what I've been doing. I'm really quite satisfied with life.
Well, listen, it's good that you've been productive, because by and large for the last 2 days I've been in a bit of a wormhole of Ronaldinho YouTube goodness. And boy, was there a lot of goodness.
There was. I was writing about him myself today for my local paper, where they still ask me for a column. And it was a reminder that in a tiny, minute way, I think, I don't know if I helped him arrive, but When the deal to Manchester, and listen, we're all probably celebrating his achievements, the Brazil achievements with Barcelona, above anything else, including Paris Saint-Germain, amongst all the clubs he played for. I guess that the golden times with Brazil and the best times with Barcelona are the things that most people will remember most fondly for. But there must be some Man United fans with a memory who are still saying, what if?
What if the nightclubs were better in Manchester? What might have been?
Well, it was done, you know, Pierre Kenyon and Francis Guy agreed verbally the price, and then Kenyon changed the price that he sent in the fax. And that's where my first sort of glimpse of the Ronaldinho madness came, in that somebody phoned me and said, the deal's broken down, tell Barcelona. And I did, and they didn't know. After which, I think it was nothing to do with my little phone call from the beach in Sitges, but I did pass it on to somebody who worked at Barcelona at that time, 2003. Did you know the deal was broken down? No, we didn't. They got tucked right into it and persuaded him that there was something better about the climate here than there was over there. And it was an extraordinary thing. Ferran Soriano called Ronaldinho our rock and roll signing at the time, and it was meant that he would win things. It would meant that he would complement the hard-working but skillful team that was built around him. It was meant that Frank Rijkaard would know how to get the best out of him. The audience he was getting at the Camp Nou compared to Parc des Princes, the stage that he needed to be on in terms of testing himself, and living a happier life, which he, I don't think he'd been at his peak in Paris. I don't think he enjoyed the changes in climate. He was that kind of bloke. It was extraordinary, and that rock and roll thing re-galvanized Barcelona's image, the attendances at the Camp Nou, their trophy performances, their ability to attract other stars. But I thought it was a sense of timing, that sense of timing he didn't have in staying hungry long enough to be part of the Pep Guardiola era. He still displayed a showman's timing in announcing this retirement just at the time when Coutinho's arrived at the Camp Nou, saying, "My inspiration for wanting to come here was what I saw as a little kid back home in Brazil watching Ronaldinho at the Camp Nou." So Ferran Soriano's idea that they were making a rock and roll signing worked at the time, worked for a handful of years, and the reverberations, the ripples in the pond from that Ronaldinho pebble kept going all the way down to Coutinho, who's now likely to play, if not this weekend, then certainly next week in the Cup quarterfinal at home to Espanyol, where Barca trail 1-0.
You'll always hear a train of thought when you talk about players with the flamboyance and the free spirit of Ronaldinho of, well, if they had a bit more of a structured life, if they were a bit more focused, well, God knows what they could have gone on to achieve. When you were around Ronaldinho and you saw him during that period when they're winning La Liga titles and they're winning the Champions League in 2006, like that sort of structure, could he have ever worked within that? Did he always need to be his own guy?
You phrased it in a way that I really like. My limited experience, I met him several times, I interviewed him a couple of times. If he saw me today, we would still hello and smile. Close and intimate. No, we weren't, but he knew how I was and we got on. And what I saw, with what I was able to write about his skill and his brilliance and the fun, was a system that just immediately... One, he came to a club that wasn't equipped to deal with him. I wrote about it in the past. I don't know if I've said it on your show, but when he was still hungry and he wanted to do extra practice, when he wanted to do training after training, particularly on penalties, on dribbling, on shooting, on free kicks, he found it really hard to get anybody at the club interested. Nobody would support him. The club wouldn't supply him with facilities. He had to go and persuade young kids from the youth system to come and join him. And that was at a time when the training ground was still next to the Camp Nou, and you could go and stand and watch that. So I found it absolutely extraordinary. This guy who was patently about to be the world star was at a club that wanted him to galvanise them in every way, marketing, football, attractiveness, yet they weren't equipped to support him properly. And another thing that happened that was really, really important was that because they'd grown up without a father, the three of them, Roberto, Daisy and Ronaldinho, he died when, or at least Roberto knew his father well, but Ronaldinho was, what, 7 or 8 when dad died. They'd been, if not impoverished, life had been tough. Ronaldinho had earned money with Roberto, his brother, juggling a football up and down the stairs in his local city, a set of steps and, winning money off tourists. And that meant that Roberto, when he was his agent, and Ronaldinho truly exploded into a world star, Roberto squeezed every last commercial second out of his brother's life. He was never at peace. He was never given time off. It literally was, take this product, who happens to be my brother, and milk it. And not milk it. I'm not saying Roberto was doing it for his own good only. It was for the family's good, the family business. But there was no concept of maybe the boy needs a rest in order to be good for the next 2 months on the pitch. And his media life and his social life and travel he did away from the football club was organised by his sister. And she sort of sacrificed her life for a number of years to not having a private life and servicing her brother's needs and trying to set up interviews for the world media. They couldn't handle it between the three of them. And he did go. I saw him out at night when he shouldn't be. He drank too much. He played his music. He partied with Deco. He ate too much steak down on the beach in Castelldefels late at night. And he found a way to unwind, to get. He wasn't just a bad boy or a silly boy. He found a way to get the pressure off him because nobody around him was giving him any kind of structure or guidance or help to say, we see what you are. You're a genius who's overloaded, and therefore what you're doing is letting your hair down. That's understandable. Nobody was ready for that, and it seems ludicrous now. It seems crazy now. And although your destiny is always in your own hands, and although he had a damn good time while he put on weight and became sluggish, and was the player who, when Pep came and booted him out, Pep first said to him, this is what Pep captivated him first before he kicked him out and told him how they were going to play, which players they were going to buy, who was going to be promoted, the emphasis on Messi, the brand of football he believed in. And Ronaldinho was like, wow, this is... And he went, but you're not part of it because I can't trust you. Mm-hmm. And so the Manchester United fans who have that what could have been feeling joined the Barcelona fans who had that what could have been feeling. But any neutral who loved watching him play is left with that... what could have been, because he retires now in better physical shape than he was in that last year at Barcelona, because he really did eat and drink and party and not rest particularly well.
I mean, is he still spoken of with affection though by people in Barcelona, Graham?
That survived through it. I mean, look, you can both tell me, or once you get me off the air, you can say to the listeners what you think about this, and I say it with a little bit of caution because we're taught to be, aren't we, cynical and not romantic, and I'm a pretty bubbly, enthusiastic person. And this thing that they sold when they bought him about he plays football with a smile on his face, it's probably become a cliche. There may be some people making a throwing up noise now, but in a world that even then, 14, 15 years ago when he first burst onto the Barcelona scene, which was still quite corporate, when people still were talking about being out of touch with the football, and He bloody well did. It wasn't simply that he did really, in all his good years at Barcelona, turn up to training and talk to the media and play with a big beaming smile on his face. He was genuinely happy, and he made you happy. It was a joy to watch him. And as much as we enjoy footballers, and as much as we can say what the great footballers do to us, there are only a handful of them, I think, that really inspire joy in you and happiness and give you awe and do things that take your breath away. And for a decent chunk of time, he was that. So you imagine what he did to this city, what it was like having him here. And also, he's a really nice person. He's a funny person, warm, very tactile. And so, yeah, the straight answer to your question is that, without question, when he's back here, he's adored, and the veterans right now who play with him, because he does play with the veterans, say it's still the same. Ronnie says, no, a veterans game in Singapore, or I don't know, Jakarta or Vietnam. That date's not good for me. I'm not playing at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the training session will be held up till he gets there. And everybody kind of lets him off, but it's still, even at this stage, playing in the vets game, which is high profile and enjoyable, and the vets are now fitter than they've ever been, it's still everything at Ronnie's pace and at Ronnie's timing, and people seem to forgive him for it.
Just briefly then, before we let you go and we wrap up on Ronaldinho, the transition then from Ronaldinho to Messi, we've seen a warm tribute from Messi towards Ronaldinho. There was magazines at the time where Ronaldinho was essentially talking about passing on the baton, that, you know, he wasn't the greatest in the world, that this guy was coming to take on that mantle. Was Ronaldinho comfortable with Messi's emergence?
Oh, he was a godfather. He made sure that this shy, really quite timid fella was welcomed. It changed Messi's ability to feel part of the dressing room. He was promoted. He was immediately part of the gang when that was good, because it was which of the three or four who get picked for the foot tennis team together. Well, Messi was suddenly in with Deco and Ronaldinho. Who was the only Argentinian allowed to sit at the Brazilian table? Messi. It's not that Messi was a little boy, but he was timid. He is humble. It was a stage where this baptism of he's one of us made a really big deal. And Silvinho was equally important in a different way, because Silvinho, a much more sober, much more professional, much more sort of dedicated guy. But the Brazilians, Deco too, absolutely adored this guy, and Messi at that stage was so good that it took it so far past the idea of jealousy, or this young buck, or this little bugger coming to. They just went, all of them just went, bloody hell. And therefore, Ronaldinho's legacy to not just to Coutinho saying, I'm here because of what I saw then, and this is where I wanted to play. You're right to say that something of the speed of development that happened in Leo Messi after Ronaldinho left was owed to the first years when little Leo Messi comes into the squad, not just the team, and daily life is made happier and easier and more comfortable because of the adoration that Ronaldinho had for him.
Graham, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Love it. Cheers.
All right, quick break and we'll wrap up.
Off the ball.
In association with Air. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back. We do have live commentary on Sunday of Southampton against Spurs. Myself and Kevin will be at St Mary's for that. I feel like I'm on a bit of a come down still after Liverpool against Manchester City.
You may as well get straight
back. I just
back
know that it's not going to live up to the hype. Okay. Though I did do this on St Stephen's Day and it was 5-2 to Spurs, so...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the reverse. So, these games have come around pretty quickly.
Yeah,
you see, Burnley United at the weekend.
Of the Stevens Day fixtures. Yeah. So that's 4 o'clock Sunday. We've got Munster Cast before that in the rugby at 1 o'clock. Nathan, given the sale of Dundalk, could you mention the exhibition on the club at the County Museum in Dundalk? It's called One Team, One Dream, and a timely reminder of the club's highs and lows over its history. Admission is free. Many thanks, Brian Walsh. Where's the County Museum in Dundalk?
I'm not entirely sure how to describe it. I've been meaning to go to that. There you go.
Jocelyn Street, JP tells me.
Jocelyn Street.
You're RD, you're not Dundalk.
No,
that's
I'm not,
where the difference
is. I've been meaning to go to that exhibition. I have heard it's very good, but I haven't gone to
it. But admission is free. Go see it at the County Museum. Tomorrow morning, Adrian Anone will be talking to Carlo Del Feva on OTB AM. He's the South African-born former Italian international who was banned for doping but later played for Ulster. Obviously, his name has loomed large in all the discussion around Gerber and Grobler over the last few days. So he's on the show from 7:45 tomorrow. OTB AM is live on Facebook, YouTube.com and Periscope from 7:45. Tomorrow night, Donegal footballer Michael Murphy, Paddy Agnew on the falling attendances in Serie A. We'll have the crappy quiz, the ball bag as well. Tom Dunn is up next. Dan, thanks as always. Good night.
Give my ball any yard of grass. I'll give you a move for the perfect pass.